AYT. Praising the Lord.
This is BJ, and I would like to welcome you to our show, Just Stuff. This show is about ordinary people just like you, just like me, combining our efforts in a positive way to make our community better, one day at a time, through conversation, encouragement, resources, empowerment, and just plain talk. Remember, you are the best part of this show. Good morning, everyone. This is BJ with Just Stuff. So glad that you're tuned in to listen to our show today. Our show today is a continuation of our show from last Tuesday. We discussed a newly published book that was published in record time. The first meeting with the participants was held in December 2020, and the book was published on December 3rd, 2021. That's record time. The name of the book is How We Got Over Growing Up in a Segregated South, a Collection of Narratives. Dr. Helen Benjamin is editor, and Jean Nash Johnson is co-editor. The narratives in the book were written by 24 classmates who attended Peabody High School, class of 1968. Today, my guests are How I Got Over narrative contributors. The first guest is Rosa Matwire, Emma Jones Gray, and Linda Green. Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
So glad that you could be with us today, and I'm very happy to be able to highlight this book that you all were contributors in. Now, many times when we write our thoughts, our stories, our emotions come alive on the pages. Now, Linda, as you relived your story, how were you affected? And then what part of your story was, what part of your story affected you the most?
First of all, thank you, Ms. Harden, for having us on your show. As I wrote my story, I would think most of the parts about death affected me the most, but the one that affected me more than any other was finding that my dad was ill, and we hadn't heard from him for a while, and he was actually at Rapids General Hospital in a coma. He had been diagnosed with lung cancer and did not tell me, and he refused to let Cousin Ernest tell me what was going on. So as a nurse, this was devastating to me. You know, every day I'm working, taking care of patients, and I could not be there for my dad. And actually, you know, we talk about early detection with cancer and other diseases, and my dad watched his neighbor go through cancer and saw how rough it was with chemotherapy and treatment. So he just flat out refused. And so that, I think, was one of the most devastating things in my life. And as we live our lives, we want to make sure we can help other people. And so that definitely has affected me throughout my life, and hopefully I can do more to help others. And of course, the death of my mother, and then finding out that I had a sister in 2000, that was also a great impact for me.
Absolutely. So did you have time to spend with your dad before he passed away?
Well, during that time, I lived in Lafayette, and once my mom told me, his neighbor called and said he was in the hospital, then
Bless you.
I came from Lafayette to Alexandria, and he was in a coma.
Oh, my.
So
bless you.
Oh my, Linda. You know, that's heartbreaking. And
yes,
you know, with everything, we just have to trust God to get us through these times, because we can't make it alone. And I'm just so sorry for you that that happened. And you know, and hopefully by reliving, it can help you heal from that.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, I am just so sorry that happened, and that has to be heartbreaking. Has to be.
Yes, indeed.
So, oh my. Okay, it's hard to move on, but we're gonna move on.
Okay.
You know, many times when we write our thoughts and you know, these type things come alive, and when we remember these type things come alive in our minds, and we just relive it, and it's hard, and but with God's help, we move on, and it's not easy.
Yes.
Now, Emma, my next question is for you.
Okay.
When there were laws, you know, back in the day, when there were laws and so many restrictions that told you can't, for people of color, then describe to me or to our audience what it was like to keep pushing against the odds.
Yes, yes. But thank you once again for the opportunity for being on your show, and God bless you and your show.
Thank you.
Well, there was up to a certain point that I didn't even realize what was going on, actually. I don't know if our parents just did not want us to. I sometimes, as I have read through the different narratives that I've read through so far, it seemed like that was a common thread, that our parents either were did not know, want us to know, you know, what was going on, or they just wanted us to just to go beyond that and not and shelter us in some kind of way. But at some point, I realized what was going on. Like the kids say today, I became woke, or I'm woke, you know. And that happened during the, I guess, from the mid to the, unto the late 60s of the, you know, the height of the civil rights movement.
Mm-hmm.
And I would hear about a lot of the classes that was before us that when they start going to a lot of the historical black colleges, they would be part of the sit-ins and all of that. And some of them probably went through the Selma, that beating and all of that that happened going across the Pettus Bridge. And so that's when I became, you know, alive, you know, about that. And so I made a determination that I was going to dispel the myth, because it seemed like the myth was that we were less than, that we, you know, were not worthy of mm-hmm. having the rights and privileges as everybody else.
Yes.
So it felt like a weight on my shoulder, but I was willing to take that weight on my shoulder, and I was determined that whatever I did moving forward, that I was not going to be the one that's pointed out to be the dummy or the failure, you know, in the class. And so that helped gave
Absolutely.
Me a drive and a push, you know, to move forward in that respect. And so when I entered the Alexandria Trade School, that's what they called it, segregation, integration had started somewhat, and I put that in quotes because the classes, although there were some of my classmates in the class, went to the same school, the Alexandria Trade, the whites, they did kind of sub-integrate, you know, segregate themselves.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I wind up in a class, the only black in my accounting class, and they all sit at in a whole group by themselves and left me again
my,
as
my.
The fly in the milk bottle. So But I was determined that I would not be the one to be the failure in the class.
All right. And that's, you know, and that's one of the characters that we have to have when we want to accomplish something, and that's determination. We have to have that determination to push forward no matter what anybody says. You have to have that determination in order to achieve. And thank you so much for your story. And I'd like to say to my audience, please get this book, because this book is absolutely compelling. You know, now, how this question is for you too, Emma. How did you decide what to share and what not to share with your readers? How did you decide that?
Well, that was not a problem for me, because of I realized and I focused on the purpose, you know, of the book, because of course all of the narratives that we have is not the totality, of course, of our lives.
Right.
Because most of us now are in our early 70s, so that's not the totality. And so I stuck with the purpose of the book, and so I focus on the things that help, you know, to help the youth to see what we've been through and how we got over, you know, and everything. So that wasn't hard at all to determine what would go in the book. So I didn't have to change the names to protect the innocent or the guilty as much as could happen. But I stuck to the, you know, to the format and the purpose of the book. So that wasn't hard for me at all.
Okay. Thank you for that. Now, excuse me, Rosa.
Yes.
What, when you wrote your narrative, what was a pivotal moment for you writing your narrative? And the second part of this question is, how do you want this book to be an inspiration to your readers, especially young people?
Well, my pivotal moment actually came before I even wrote a word. One of the pivotal moments, I'm sure. But when I was asked to be a part of the project, I had a straight up high school moment.
Oh,
it was like,
goodness.
Oh, my God, I've been asked to participate in something with the cool kids, you know. It's like, oh, my God, I've been asked to do something, and then the panic set in. It was like, okay, I'm not sure what to write. I don't know what to write, how to write it. I don't know if it'll be good. I don't know if it'll be good enough to compare with, you know, successful members of my class and just
mm-hmm.
all that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my thoughts ran the gamut.
Right.
So the pivotal moment for me, though, was when I let myself be quiet and quieted my thoughts. And I asked myself, who are you? Who are you? And like Emma said about the purpose of the book, who are you in the purpose of this book? And I wrote, I am Rosa Marie Ashby Matuier.
There you go.
Daughter of Thomas Joseph Ashby Sr. and Rosa Tefaro Ashby.
There you go.
And that was my pivotal moment. When I let
myself yourself.
Know who I am,
that's it.
Then I could write my story.
So, all right.
Like I said, in that story, of course, I took some twists and turns, but that was the pivotal moment for me.
Mm-hmm.
So as far as inspiring others with this narrative, there were things that I had in my mind that I specifically wanted to put in the narrative, and I did. But what I would want the young people to figure out for themselves is speak your truth.
That's it.
To be able to speak your truth, whether you are ordinary, plain and simple like me, or if you're extraordinary and fabulous like some other folks, speak your truth and tell your story, because your story deserves to be told.
That's
as well.
That's it.
And then the other thing that the young people as well as the older people need to do, write your stories, write them down, and pass them on to your family. Because so many stories are lost because we just hold on to them because we figure nobody wants to hear them. So, you know, speak your truth and pass it down.
Amen.
Absolutely. Now, I suppose these narratives were therapeutic for everybody, you know, in some way, in some fashion, in some form or fashion. It was therapeutic for everybody. And I do appreciate you ladies. I know there are men in the that are men who wrote narratives also. But I do appreciate you all telling your stories. And that's why I just implore everybody who knows about this book will get a copy of this book and read it. Now, what is your contact information?
Okay, as far as information about the book and any activities surrounding the book, there you could go to howwegotover.org, and that's the title of the book, howwegotover.org, mm-hmm. and get any information about any activities surrounding the book. Also, as far as books themselves, as far as getting the books, is that you want that information now too?
I'm sorry.
As far as finding the books, is you want that information now
yes,
too?
Yes.
Okay. We will be having a book signing in Alexandria. And that'll be at the Rapides Parish Library, the main branch on Washington Street downtown. That'll be January the 15th from 2 to 4 p.m. I'm told that most of the writers will be there to sign books and to talk about stories.
Okay, that's fine.
Yeah, so if people want to come out on the 15th, that would be a great occasion to come out. See the people who wrote the narratives, talk to them, and you can purchase books at that time. Also, books are online at Amazon.com, and you can purchase them online. Or here locally, one of our classmates, Joseph Jett, has some books. So if you want to buy a book here locally, you can contact him. And his number is 318-451-2072, Joseph Jett.
Okay, that's great. Does anyone have any more comments about the book and about their narratives?
Yes, this is Emma. So I wanted to kind of address question number one too about, as I relived, you know, certain aspects of the story. And so it caused me to remember, you know, times gone by and how much my mom and dad had to endure, you know, in order to, you know, to push us to go beyond, you know, their circumstances.
They were
wonderful examples, you know. And like I said, I knew that both my parents were hardworking individuals at their individual jobs, my dad being a chef all over the town, Ramada Inn, Holiday Inn, and eventually at the famous Bentley Hotel downtown. But I didn't know is how much the pain it cost them, you know, of the different things they had to go through. My mom being overlooked for promotions, you know, which happens today, of course, but it was so blatant in those days. Working at St. Francis Cabrina Hospital, she worked from down in the laundry room on up to, before she left, being a surgical instrument technology. But and today you have to go to school for that. My dad, you know, I happened to hear him saying to my mom, "I'm not a boy, Maxine, I'm not a boy." And how he walked off the job. And I didn't really fully understand it. As I look back, I didn't understand it at the time. I just thought, you know, that was just him being, because he wasn't a boy, he was a man. But I didn't understand that that was part of the dynamic of the Jim Crow. So
yes.
I relived, you know, went back and looked at that and how the sacrifices that they made, you know, for us and the things once they left out of our little greenhouse there and what they had to endure.
Absolutely. Now, will someone tell us, excuse me, will someone tell us what the Jim Crow law is?
In part, Linda, did you, if someone else want to go for me, and I can just tell what, in part, if someone else want to.
You can do it, Emma.
Well, in part, the Jim Crow law was basically letting you know that you are not equal to your white counterpart.
Okay.
And so it was, and it really wasn't a separate but equal. It
right.
was not. So that's
right.
not what it was.
Right.
It was basically keeping you in your place.
Right.
That even though you supposedly laws were passed and everything, but they wanted to let you know you're still not accepted, you know, as a full citizen. By doing the separation of the water fountains and the
right,
bathrooms
right.
and coming through the back door. So it was just still a system of going from one type of slavery attitude to the other. You're
Absolutely.
Still not accepted
Absolutely.
Because you were brought over here to be merchandise, to be merchandise for your physical body. We don't want your mental mentality. You know, you're not even allowed to read and write and so forth.
Right.
So it's just a continuation of an institutional continuation of now become institutional instead of just out and out blatant, but it's still separation that you're not good enough.
You're not good enough, absolutely. And that was one of the things that struck me when I was reading some of the narratives too, is about the parents. And their sacrifices for the children to have maybe what they didn't have, but the sacrifices they made, the 2 and 3 jobs, sometimes 4 jobs that they worked in order to provide for their children so their children can have the best. And that's just amazing. That's amazing. And, you know, I haven't finished all of the stories, but I intend to finish all of the narratives. But,
yes.
you know, I do appreciate you ladies being with us today for sharing your stories. You know, there are just no words. There are hardly no words to express the magnitude of this book, of these narratives, because everyone has come from somewhere, and you're sharing your stories of where you came from, but the precious part is you got over. Just like
yeah,
the title of the book says, how we got over. You got over.
Yes,
thank God
right.
you got over. And I appreciate you, and I thank you for being with us today. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having us.
Absolutely.
And may I say one more thing before we go?
Sure.
If that's permitted.
Sure.
I just wanted to thank God for allowing me to be in the class of 68. I mentioned on a Zoom meeting that we had one time that I actually was supposed to be in class of 67.
Mm-hmm.
But it came a time in my family's life where things got really rough. Where my mom, I'm the 4th child in, and it was really rough for my mom to keep things going. So she was the strategizer in the family, and so she had to strategize and see who would be the best one to keep the 2 siblings that was behind me. And so my older siblings, one was in high school about to come out, the next one, and so forth and everything. And so the lot fell on me, and I remember my mom coming to me in tears. Now, this is my mom. I hardly saw her cry. She was a strategist.
Mm-hmm.
And she came to me in tears and asked me, I was just getting ready to go into junior high, and she asked me in tears, would I mind foregoing, you know, junior high, going to Jones Street for 1 year while she gets the budget together and get it straight to keep the other two siblings. And I told her yes. I didn't give her any problems. And I'm telling you, the next year when I entered the class, entered junior high, which wind up putting me in class of 68. So the scripture that everybody quotes, Jeremiah 29:11, mm-hmm. for he knows the plan.
Oh, yes.
And here I am yeah. today. If I had yeah. not, you know, been an obedient child and did what my mother asked me to do.
God bless you.
God bless you.
God bless you. Okay. Once again, I would like to congratulate y'all on your accomplishment. And, you know, y'all just have a blessed rest of the day. God bless you all.
Thank you so much. God bless you all.
Us a long time ago. He loved us enough to allow us to be born. He loved us enough to allow Jesus to come. Jesus loved us enough to die for us. It would be a disservice to Jesus not to love ourselves after all he went through for me and you. God elevated us by loving us. Jesus elevated us by dying for us. The Holy Spirit elevates us by living in